Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So here we are again, the Tennis Podcast from Roland Garros. Catherine Whittaker is in Paris, myself, David Law. I'm not, but I have been following things with interest. And it has been just another, Catherine, intriguing day. Every day at the moment seems to throw something up. And we've had a big shock today with the demise of Elina Svitolina, who I think many people thought this was going to be her time. We keep talking about her in the same breath as Alexander Zverev, as the players who keep winning big at the Masters Series events, but not being able to translate it into the slams. And Zverev very nearly went as well today. So it's all happening. What's the atmosphere like on the ground there?
Yeah, I feel like it's in the last 24 hours that this tournament has really caught a light, with starting with the Serena Williams-Ash Barty match, which really was a thriller. And then it's kind of followed through into today. Thanks, David and Charlie, by the way, for filling the void while I sort of fell into a cheese coma yesterday evening, but it's very good to be back. So, the last 24 hours has been by far the best, I think, so far in this French Open. I think Elina Svitolina and Grigor Dimitrov would probably disagree, but it was a weird one because I see parallels status-wise in Elina Svitolina and Sasha Zverev. They've both completely proven themselves. Everyone's convinced of their ability there. They're coming in here. Svitolina was the joint favourite along with Halep. Zverev, the second favourite for the men's title, albeit a distant one. But they've completely not failed. They've completely failed to prove themselves at Grand Slam level. And their matches didn't entirely overlap. But, you know, they were both in trouble. And you kind of thought they could really both go here. Svitolina are losing out to, I mean, look, Buzănescu is a great story, a really great story. She's 30 years of age. She seeded here at a slam for the very first time in her career. She seeded 31st. She was used as an example in the general debate about Serena Williams and seeding for mothers post-pregnancy. At the time, it looked like she might have ended up being the 32nd seed and therefore would have been the one being bumped out of a seeded position, having worked so hard and done so brilliantly to earn that place. Apparently, this statistic comes from Joe Jury, so I've no reason to doubt it. But apparently, she's won more tennis matches than anybody else in the past 12 months. I first became really aware of her when she reached the final in Prague a few weeks ago, lost out to Petra Kvitova there. She's from Romania. She's a wonderful story, an absolutely wonderful story. And despite having had that amazing year, I don't think anyone was picking her to beat Elina Svitolina in two straight sets. But there it is.
And what was the feeling? Was the feeling that she took it from Svitolina, or did Svitolina not show up properly today?
In all honesty, David, I didn't watch the match. I was busy. We've been focusing mostly on Longlen today, and that match was over on court number one, which is interesting because Svitolina has had pretty high billing up until this point. Today has been a cracking order of play, I have to say. The fact that Eurosport decided to focus attention on Long Lin shows how good the matches are there, and Chatrier has been the same. But I didn't see much of the match. She's a very canny tennis player, Bizinescu, and I suspect what happened is Svitolina likes to play with other people's pace rather. I think Simona Halep once described her ball as kind of like a really floaty tennis ball. You know, she doesn't generate her own pace, Svitolina. She likes to absorb the pace of others, and I don't think Bizinescu is much of a power player. But still, I find that surprising, because I thought if Svitolina was going to lose, it would be to somebody that could hit through her. I think I had her in my predictions losing to Kvitova, who incidentally may well not even make it onto court today for her match against Annette Kontaveit, because court Suzanne Longlen is going so long, courtesy mostly of the four-set match between Roberto Bautista Agut and Novak Djokovic, which felt for a while like it might go on forever. Currently, David Goffin and Gael Monfils are midway through the first set in a match with, I mean, each rally, David, is taking about a minute and a half. So Petra Kvitova somewhere here is contemplating quite a long wait to potentially be sent home for the night. But
they're actually in a first set tiebreaker, Goffin and Monfils, as you say. Every rally is just an epic individual item. Incidentally, I'm reading a piece here by Courtney Nguyen, who we know well from the WTA, who wrote about Mihaela Bizinescu and actually confirms that sort of statistic you just quoted from Joe Jury. Apparently she went from the top 500 to her top 40 debut inside 9 months. I mean, that is an incredible rise, isn't it? And she's also a PhD student. I mean, you know, she studied physical education and sport in Bucharest as she waited for her body to heal after she had a lot of injuries. It's a little bit similar to, is it Sevastova, who's got a similar kind of story, who took some time out of the game and healed her body, you know, and here she is playing the best tennis of her life later on. I mean, it is one of those things that happens more these days. And actually, if you get time to just sort of drill into the stories, and you kind of need them to have a result like this, because now suddenly everybody is interested in Mihaela Bizinescu of Romania to find out about her. And we suddenly unearth all this stuff. I mean, some people obviously like Courtney are following the tour and on the circuit, and they delve in a lot earlier than perhaps we do. But yeah, great story. And a PhD student.
And the same, David, would have gone, exactly the same words would have applied to Demir Djumhur, who was 1 point away from beating second seed Sasha Zverev today on Philippe Chatrier. His story is extraordinary. We've sort of referenced it before on the tennis podcast, but if you have chance to properly delve into the story of Demir Djumhur from Bosnia-Herzegovina, his childhood tennis club where he learnt to play was bombed during the war, and he practically had to make himself a tennis player with absolutely zero resource and barely a tennis court to even play on. It's a story that deserves to be told and brought to the attention of as many people as possible. And had he won one extra point today, an awful lot more people would be remembering the name. But he still played a very big part in an extraordinary match. And, David, an extraordinary match that may end up, who knows, putting paid to Zverev's chances this year. It could go either way, couldn't it? We're really going to find out.
Well, what's your take? Based on what you've seen, I mean, we had that five-setter for Zverev a few days ago, and we were talking about that one when he played against Lajovic. What do you think about this one? Because, I mean, I thought that he would go on from that five-setter and just, frankly, manhandle Djumhur. As good a player as he is, I thought his subtle spins and so forth, that Zverev would just sledgehammer his way through all that. And he took the first set 6-2, then he lost the next couple of sets. Frankly, Djumhur got himself into a winning position, I think 4-2 up, leading 2-1 in the fourth set, 4-2 up, and he didn't close. What was your sense? Was this a really below par Alexander Zverev?
My feeling going into the match was exactly the same as you. I thought one five-setter, e.g. the Lajovic five-setter, good news for Alex Zverev. I felt like he was strong enough physically to cope with it and not to drain his canister too much. for the matches ahead, but that it would harden him by just the right amount and give him the right amount of confidence and belief. Two back-to-back five-setters? I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that that is good news at all for Zverev. He may well prove me wrong. This could be the maturing and the making of Zverev before our very eyes. But the words I had ringing in my ears were those of Boris Becker a couple of years ago at Queen's, when he had just coached Djokovic to the crowning glory of his career here at Roland Garros, winning finally the French Open, having beaten Andy Murray in the final. And Boris was asked what the difference was between the two in that very close final between Murray and Djokovic, and he said, I can't remember the exact number of hours. Was it 8 hours the difference in the time they'd spent on court prior to the final, David? Was it as many as eight?
It was certainly a big difference between the two.
You know,
wasn't
Murray
it?
Had been
Murray
taken
had those
to
epics
against Matthias Borg, and then by Radek Stepanek in the first couple of rounds, and I think there was a match with a lot of tie breaks against John Isner in there, and whatever the number was, and I have a funny feeling that it might have been as many as 8 hours. That was what Boris thought made the difference in the final. As simple as that. So I had those words ringing in my ears. He may well prove us wrong. We know how hard he's worked physically with Jez Green, his fitness trainer, of course, previously a fitness trainer of Andy Murray. But we are sure going to find out what Alex Zverev is physically and mentally made of over the course of the next 2 weeks. Or maybe not the next 2 weeks. He's going to have a test on his hands in the next round, either Puy or Khachanov, who are currently battling it out on Philippe Chatrier. Khachanov was in the lead in the first set last time I checked, but David, you quickly say something and I'll have a look at where that match is at.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because I do have a feeling that as much as Zverev is struggling at the moment, and two back-to-back five-set matches at this stage of a Grand Slam is not what he would have wanted, not against the sort of opposition he was up against. He's supposed to handle those couple of players comfortably on paper. But I always have, I've seen it so many times with other players that winning five-setters is the making of them. And I even think back to the Australian Open at the start of this year when Kyle Edmund did it. You know, he beat Kevin Anderson in five. He then beat, was it Basilashvili in five? You know, he was finding a way through, and suddenly when he came up against Grigor Dimitrov in the quarters, he delivered and he got to a semi-final. I kind of feel like that might be what happens here for Zverev. Khachanov or Puy, well, neither one of them is a gimme.
Khachanov took the first set, just to update you, 6-3. They're on serve in the second. That's why it sounds a bit quiet on Philippe Chatrier at the moment.
Either Nishikori or Thiem. Nishikori's playing well at the moment, and Thiem actually up against Berrettini. That one's not done yet as we talk to you. But I mean, I think the other one you mentioned briefly, Djokovic winning through in a match that did seem to take forever against Bautista Agut. He got through in four, 6-2 in the fourth. But I found the conversation you had with Boris Becker last night very interesting on Djokovic and how he just feels he isn't there yet. I mean, we've speculated about it, we've given our views on it, but to hear it from Becker, who knows him up close. And he knows that he's scrabbling around at the moment still, trying to find his real self.
Yeah, without doubt, the noises we're hearing is that he's not there, and we're perhaps expecting too much from him too soon still. And to assume that, you know, on the basis of a couple of good dialed in performances that he's, you know, in quotes, back, is just unrealistic. It's not going to happen like that. I do hear sort of, I've not heard anybody say explicitly or on record, you know, Boris didn't quite say, I don't think he's practicing as hard as he was at the top of his game, but he did talk about the mechanical robotic elements of his game and how that only came with thousands and thousands of balls hit on the practice court. And he said, you know, that's what's missing at the moment. So by implication, I take that to mean, you know, from what I could tell, he's working hard, you know, he's practicing every day. You know, I'm not suggesting he's slacking off, but in terms of the relentlessness of what he put in at the very top to you know, he just didn't miss, David. He didn't miss, did he? He had that extraordinary length on every single ball, never dropped a ball short, never missed, and that only, you know, as much as it seems like magic and it seems like something that, you know, gets out of bed and just does, or it seemed like it at the time, it wasn't. He said it came with thousands and thousands of balls hit on the practice court, and you can't conjure that out of nowhere. So yeah, I think he's still searching for his reason to be on the tennis court. I thought today against Bautista Agut might be difficult for him, because I'm not sure where you are, everybody is, if the what's happened with Bautista Agut recently, but his mother died out of the blue 10 days ago, just 3 days I think before the start of this tournament. Is his father is in ill health as well, and he's an only child. It really is a completely seismic thing for Bautista Agut, and there are echoes of the situation we had here with Steve Johnson last year, where he was just playing on through the grief, because it was all he knew how to do. You know, he didn't see any other way to put one foot in front of the other and keep moving. So, I mean, obviously incredible that Bautista Agut's here, made the third round, was able to do what he did against Djokovic today. But I thought Djokovic might struggle to get energised and to get in the face of Bautista Agut, because he's what he's going through. I thought he might be too respectful of that emotional turmoil to really get himself pumped up for the fight, if that makes sense. But he did it. He found a way to do it respectfully. I don't think he was in the face of Bautista Agut, but certainly in those last couple of sets, he really found a bit of fire. He certainly looked a lot less flat, yeah, out there. So we'll see. Verdasco next. Verdasco next.
That's a tough draw, isn't it? I mean, Verdasco against Dimitrov, I mean, he handled him comfortably, really, after a tough tiebreak first set. He just dominated Grigor Dimitrov, and who's still never got to the second week of this particular tournament, and he's going to start plummeting in the rankings soon. But, I mean, yeah, Djokovic-Verdasco, that could go either way. I wonder whether it might be that sort of match that brings out the animal in Djokovic, because ultimately, I think that's what's going to be required if he's going to maximise his potential here and get back to what he was. That we saw a bit of that from Serena Williams yesterday, didn't we? We saw the real fire in the belly from her, and that's what these champions have to dial into at some point.
Yeah, but then equally, you know, we keep talking about it. I do as much as anyone in terms of, you know, it almost being like flicking a switch and him finding that one thing, and everything I'm hearing from, you know, Boris Becker and Mats Wilander and people who know far better than me is just not going to work like that. It's not going to be a question of if it just all falling into place and him being the guy that he was a couple of years ago. So I don't know. I love the atmosphere on these courts when you're waiting for Djokovic to walk out, because there's such a sort of feeling of mystery and inertia and of wondering what's going to present itself on the court and not knowing what to expect. You know, the defining feature of Djokovic a couple of years ago during his dominance was that you knew exactly what to expect. You know, his brutal monotony never let you down, and now you just don't know what to expect from him, and it's fascinating. No.
So similar to Nadal 2 or 3 years ago. And with him, it wasn't a switch. I think probably because Federer won that Australian Open after the long layoff, we just assume that is what happens with everybody. And well, it doesn't. And this is another example of that. Incidentally, how close are you to the Philippe Chatrier court at the moment? Because I've heard a couple of roars down our Skype line. And sure enough, Lucas Pouille broke serve. I mean, it's an incredible atmosphere, isn't it? Well, I mean, there's two French players on at the same time at the moment with him and Monfils.
Yeah, I can see the flags of the Philippe Chatrier court fluttering over my right shoulder, and I can hear the umpire announcements. And when something particularly big happens, I can hear the roars. But I'm currently ensconced in the broadcast compound. I'm a lot nearer to a very large air conditioning unit than I am to the Philippe Chatrier court. But yeah, they're having a ball, the French, here today. I had a very, very interesting chat about Gael Monfils later. Our producer decided the only way we could possibly try and fathom the enigma that is Gael Monfils would be to try and chat to a Frenchman, an enigma himself, Henri Leconte, and he just said no one will ever fathom the enigma that is Gael Monfils, pretty much. And yeah, he's won the first set, though, against Davy Goffin, so...
Yeah, well, that one will go late into the night, one suspects.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage... Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A look at the women's draw here, Catherine, results from today, and some pretty straightforward wins as well. Caroline Wozniacki, having struggled early on a little, and we wondered really how long her French Open might last, because she's not always that comfortable on it. 6-love, 6-3 over Pauline Parmentier today. Madison Keys.
Yeah, there were moments, David, when that... that had double bagel written on it.
Yeah,
which for a French woman on Philippe Chatrier is not an indignity. I wish on anyone. No. So I'm very glad it didn't pan out that way. Wozniacki looking utterly dominant, but I'm still not convinced that she really believes she can win the French Open. That's what I'm not convinced by.
No, Madison Keys won the big hitting contest against Naomi Osaka 6-1, 7-6.
She was very impressive,
Daria
David.
Kasatkina kept
very
up her
impressive
run.
Indeed, Keys.
Really?
Yeah, if she can stay together physically, then I think, you know, no one's talking about her.
That's the thing with her, though, isn't it? A, the physicality, and B, the potential, the possibility that she just might, as John McEnroe says, lay an egg one day and throw in a terrible performance. Because, I mean, remember at the Australian Open when she was just destroying everybody, and then she came out of the things against Angelique Kerber and she couldn't hit a barn door from 10 paces. You know, it was just a completely different player because of the way she goes about it. But... yeah, I mean, somebody here is going to make a name for themselves. And she's got a Yelena Ostapenko-type game. So why not? Wouldn't that be an interesting story?
Kasatkina, somebody else that could make a name for herself. She has got Wozniacki next. And that Wozniacki is, I mean, she's dealt with it as well as she possibly can. Barely lost a game, Wozniacki. But she has had a relatively... simple draw, simple passage through to round four. Things are not going to be simple next when she plays Kasatkina.
Mm. But Buzanescu, incidentally, is on the doubles court and she won in mixed doubles. so she's a busy woman this week. Another doubles result I note is the Williams sisters have won as well. I mean, it's just so intriguing, isn't it? We were talking with Charlie last night about what he thought. He does not think we're going to get Sharapova against Serena Williams in the fourth round. They've both got to come through their respective third round matches. Williams against Yulia Gerges and Sharapova against Karolina Pliskova. What do you think?
I think we will get it, actually, David. I don't think I would have said that yesterday. But I feel like Sharapova is winning that one against Pliskova. I do. I mean, it's a bit of a toss of the coin because we know exactly what they'll both do, and it just depends who's firing that bit better on the day. I don't think there'll be a huge amount of tactics going on. It's just who woke up on the better side of the bed. And with Serena and Gerges, I don't know, it might be a little bit of heart, not head happening here, but she started to convince me last night about against Ash Barty. She started to convince me. So and the points will be shorter against Gerges. So, yeah, I think we're going to get it. I think we're going to get it.
I think so too. Hooray.
Hooray.
We'll see. Match point, incidentally, for Dominic Thiem against Matteo Berrettini at the moment of Italy. Talking of Italians as well, tomorrow on Saturday, we're going to be getting Fabio Fognini against Kyle Edmund. Talked about that with Charlie as well. What do you think?
I think that is going to be spicy. But I think that Kyle Edmund knows that he can weather a Fognini storm. I think he will take the attitude of, okay, you're playing some brilliant stuff. Try and do this over five sets, because I can physically go five sets with you easily today. And if you can do a Fognini for five sets, then good luck to you. You know, you deserve the win. But I think he's got the maturity now to not panic when Fognini's doing his thing, and to know that physically he is the stronger. Not that Fognini's not strong, but watching the way he broke down against Nadal in Rome, I question his five-set stayability. So I'd be very surprised if it's a straight setter. I'd be very surprised if Fognini doesn't turn it on for good chunks of it. I just think that Edmund will be the overall stronger on the day.
So, Catherine, I will let you go because it's going to go late into the night. The order of play hasn't even come out yet because they do like to take their time. They like a good nap over there. Just very quickly, Catherine, one of the people I saw you speak to yesterday, you set up a lovely little chat between two Yorkshiremen, and I very much enjoyed that. The journalist that's been creating all the headlines and Kyle Edmund, and they seem to get along famously.
They did. They talked about all things Yorkshire, did Kyle Edmund and Jonathan Pinfield. That is my favourite thing that I've done all week, all tournament here in Paris. It was, it was lovely. You know, we're always thinking about, he's a lovely lad, Kyle Edmund. I really like him. I think he comes across really well. I am full of admiration for his attitude and the way he goes about his job. But I think it's fair to say he's quite serious, isn't he? He's quite straight and, you know, answers questions very earnestly, which, you know, I respect. But we're sort of constantly looking for ways to bring out the lightness in him, I suppose, to bring a bit of joviality out in him interview-wise. And I'm sure it will come naturally over time. But, you know, we try and force the issue a bit by having kooky ideas, like introducing him to Jonathan Pinfield. And, I thought it went quite well. The editor back in Eurosport Towers in Feltham did a cracking job on it, and it is available on the internet, heavily tweeted by Jonathan Pinfield himself, who is becoming quite the he's a walking media circus. David, he's going to have an agent soon.
Brilliant. Okay, Catherine, nearly cheese board time, so you go and do some more work, do your highlights, links, all that kind of thing. It's 5-love for Goffin now in the second set, so it's going to be one of those soap opera matches.
It's going to go on for all our lives, David. It'll still be happening when we're back here tomorrow.
Excellent. Great. Well, we'll be back with another tennis podcast tomorrow, and we are daily throughout the French Open, of course. In fact, all of the Grand Slam tournaments. If you'd like to leave us a review, if you're enjoying the shows, please do so on iTunes. Tell people about the show if you think they might enjoy it. It always helps us to just grow the audience and our little tennis podcast community. We are brought to you, of course, in association with The Telegraph. Loads of great stuff being written in there by Simon Briggs and Charlie Eccleshare. So check that out over the weekend. There'll be some really good articles, I'm sure. We are also executive produced by Melanie Bowes, by TennisBalls.com, by Triple S. We've had some fantastic tennis podcastaways, the entries into our competition for a three-day holiday in La Manga Club with a couple of days of training as well. You just have to basically get your pictures in of you consuming the tennis podcast on your phone somewhere lovely with animals maybe in it, with your tennis podcast t-shirt on, whatever it is. Incidentally, a couple of days of free postage if you're in the UK and you want want to get your t-shirts in, which say Tennis Podcast, to show your love for us. Well, I'm sure that's something you want to do. And we also have, of course, Charlie the Ferret as our mascot. We'll be back tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.